everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Oner Podcast, the podcast where we break down and review films all in one big, long, unbroken take. I'm Austin Archer. With me, as always, is my childhood next-door neighbor and lifelong best friend.
Kramer, England.
Okay, Kramer.
Yes.
So we decided to do something a little different this week. We decided to go back into the vault. We didn't do anything that's in theaters. We recently reviewed Captain America Brave New World, the new Captain America movie with Harrison Ford as the Red Hulk. And there's obviously Thunderbolts coming out soon. Mm-hmm. And we decided to kind of go back and take a look at a few MCU movies from a past era, from, I guess, you know, phases 1 through 3 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
I'm not sure which phases it was, the arc, kind of the infinity.
Yeah. Infinity saga.
The saga that, yeah, you know, begins with Iron Man in 2005 or whatever, and ends with Endgame in 2019.
Yeah.
We just grabbed two kind of random movies. One was a Captain America movie so that we could be kind of directly comparing,
yes,
a Captain America film to what we just watched with Brave New World. And the other was just another kind of like random one from that era. We decided to watch Captain America, the Winter Soldier, and Ant-Man, and Captain America, Ant-Man.
Captain Ant-Man.
And they're all called Captain America from that era.
Yes, yes.
Captain America, Thor, The Dark World, Captain America, Iron Man 3.
Yes. they had, yep, they were trying to get an audience.
Captain America, Avengers, The Age of Ultron.
Yeah, yeah.
That was the problem with that era, was that everything was called Captain America.
We
watched Captain America, The Winter Soldier, and Ant-Man. And I think that the idea here is just to sort of have a conversation about like what, and I know that I feel like this, a lot of people have talked about this on the internet in media commentary of like, did the MCU fall off? Is the MCU still as good or as relevant culturally as it once was?
Mm-hmm.
Are the stories hitting as hard as they used to? In my personal opinion, I don't think that it has been hitting as hard for some time now.
Yeah, I would say that even Disney has noticed it, and Marvel has noticed that it hasn't. I think when they started focusing on movies and TV shows, it really kind of like, I mean, when you start, you know, when you really start expanding, it takes a toll a lot on creatives, right? And I think that was probably just too much, so you've seen them scale back. They're not making as many TV shows, and they're trying not to churn out so much, which I think is going to be beneficial in the long run, but we're still kind of feeling the effects of that, I think.
Yeah, you definitely, I mean, there was like after Endgame and like once Disney, yeah, Plus launched, there was all of a sudden so much Marvel content. There already had been so much Marvel content,
yeah,
you know, in like a 15-year span. But then there was just all of a sudden, you know, between WandaVision and Falcon and the Winter Soldier and Hawkeye, and there was all of a sudden just this massive influx, and it was too much to keep up with, you know, She-Hulk, and it does feel like they're paring back. But going and watching Captain America Brave New World, it was like, it doesn't really feel like the pulling back has given you guys time to really hone in on the storytelling. It still feels like these stories are a little underbaked. Maybe there's too many cooks in the kitchen. I think personally, my kind of overarching theory for all of the MCU and all of these storylines is that they're suffering from something that I'm deciding to call narrative decay. And it's sort of something that I don't know if there's any cure for it. It's something that happens to lots of TV shows when they figuratively jump the shark. Like, you know, it's just sort of, in my opinion, the Marvel Cinematic Universe is a very expensive, very big, very long running TV show.
Yeah. Yeah.
But for a long time, we would all show up 2 or 3 times a year and watch the new episode of the Marvel show. And there were new characters being introduced, and storylines would overlap, and they would sort of, the continuity of the story was like where one story ended, the next one would kind of begin and grab the baton and take it. And it was a very entertaining, very well-crafted TV show for the most part. When you actually watch those movies through, starting at Iron Man and going to kind of Endgame, there's a really, it's a really impressive piece. Some things get kind of rearranged or retconned occasionally, but for the most part, there's a lot of things that pay off nicely narratively. And I think this happens with just like a lot of TV shows, particularly American TV shows, where a show is a hit and the network doesn't want to let it go because it's a big money maker.
Yes.
But the show kind of gets to a point where it's sort of completed all of the natural arcs that it was setting up for its main characters. And it doesn't really know what to do with them anymore. And so it'll start doing things like killing characters off that people didn't want to see killed off, or it'll start doing things like setting up weird love triangles between, you know, it's like,
it's like trying
Joey and Rachel. And you're like, nobody asked for Joey and Rachel.
I'm thinking about The Office.
Yeah. Like,
okay. Michael leaves. You should end the show.
Right.
And it was kind of a natural end. They went on for two more seasons. It was, they weren't horrible, but that kind of, in my opinion, you kind of want to leave people wanting more, you know, like that's a great way to get people always excited about your show. The problem with a lot of American TV shows is that they start a show without the end in mind. And that's why there are so many TV shows that are, have very unsatisfying endings, like Game of Thrones, which I can't say, I have not watched Game of Thrones, but from the majority of what I've heard, people are not satisfied with the ending. You know, I mean, 24 there, you know, it's just like when you start a season, you have the end in mind. So a season can usually be good. But then when you're trying to wrap up a series, it's like, you, if you didn't have that ending in mind from the very beginning, it's not going to feel like it paid off. Like it, it happened. And this happens all the time. So like with the MCU, they had the end in mind of Thanos, like from the beginning, pretty much. Like maybe they didn't know with like Iron Man and like Thor, but I think about probably honestly around Thor, for sure the Avengers, because they had that post-credit scene.
Right.
But they knew that Thanos was the end. Thanos was the end game, pun intended, right? Like that was the one that they were working towards. And it felt so satisfying because every movie all of a sudden started leading up to that point. So now we've had this ending. And now it's like what we've talked about with a TV show, like, well, where do we go from here? Well, let's try to make these characters interesting. But the other thing that I thought about, especially with Brave New World, like Sam Wilson is not a leading character,
right?
We have a movie that is about a side character who is a sidekick. That's not really as interesting as the main character. And you it's, he's still not really that interesting. And he's not really a story driver.
Well, and it's like, you know, inside of, so knowing that your end goal is to get to Thanos and to get to that confrontation with Thanos and the Avengers, that that's going to be the ultimate test for, this group of heroes that we're tracking across this episodic story.
Right.
Inside of that, there are all these character arcs that are being built. There's this arc with, you know, so like we watched Captain America, the Winter Soldier, and there's this really nice arc that you're tracking with Steve Rogers, who starts off as this idealistic, patriotic World War II soldier, who's like this symbol of American, he's an American propaganda symbol of about American exceptionalism and American freedom. And he sacrifices everything for, you know, for America and his country in the war. And he, the movie Captain America, the First Avenger, ends with him going into the ice. The next time we see Captain America in this continuity is he's awakened to help the Avengers fight Loki. And he comes out and he basically just gets right back into action as like, he's a soldier who knows how to act as part of a unit. And he kind of butts heads with Tony Stark because Tony Stark's a little bit of a do it himself guy. And he's got to get Tony to be like, hey man, if we're going to work together, we got to work together as a team. That's how I work best. Yeah. And Tony's got to show a little bit of humility to like, hey, I'm not trying to step on your toes here. I'm just saying we got to be a team. And by the time we get to Captain America, the Winter Soldier, Cap's still sort of running ops for S.H.I.E.L.D. and just doing what he knows how to do, which is like take orders and show up and do things. But from the beginning of the movie, we kind of see that he's a little bit disillusioned with like, I don't really get, I just kind of got woken up and now I'm just sort of running errands for,
yeah. Well, and really, especially, I love that they have Black Widow in this because of her story. And because of how gray she is, like Captain America at the beginning is kind of still black and white, right? Like in the '40s, it was like, oh, black and white, good and evil. You know, Nazis are bad. The axis of power or whatever it was.
Allied forces are better. Yeah.
Right. So like now it's kind of like, you know, she's doing all this kind of crazy stuff and he thinks it's wrong. But in the end, it turns out that that was the reason they found Hydra. Right. And it is actually a really good story arc for Steve, because he's like, he basically realizes that like, well, this isn't all good. Like this is, and actually he's kind of, at the beginning, that's kind of what he's with, you know. I love the exchange between him and Samuel Jackson, Nick Fury, you know, where they're talking about their surveillance that they're doing and how that's wrong and how that's like, this isn't freedom. This is fear. Right.
Yep.
And I think it is actually a really good story arc to see him kind of go from Boy Scout to, you know, thinking what is the best for.
This leads really nicely into where his story goes in Captain America Civil War too.
Yeah.
So the whole kind of journey and arc of Steve Rogers is one of discovering personal agency and personal freedom.
Yeah.
It goes from being kind of an idealistic soldier who takes orders and who kind of bravely rushes into dangerous situations with no thought of himself, but he does sort of blindly just take whatever he's told to do. He goes and does it. And he tries to be a good soldier. Yeah. And the journey of Steve Rogers, by the time we get to Endgame, is he finally decides that he's going to do something for himself. And that's where his story kind of ends, is he decides, I completed the mission. I did what needed to be done. And now I'm going to do something for me. I'm going to do something for Steve, and I'm going to go and live my life with the love of my life, which
is such a great payoff for him. Cause that's what he's always, every movie, that's what he's wanted. He wishes he could have that dance. Right. Well,
in Captain America Winter Soldier, it's so nice to see that sort of aching where he's like, well, I don't even know what I would do if I wasn't doing this, because I'm not from here. I don't know anybody. The only woman I've ever loved is really old and is dying with dementia. And so what would I even do? And I love that Natasha's always trying to get him to go on dates with people and stuff. Yeah. But he's like, I don't speak the same language as these people, you know?
Yeah.
And
Well, yeah, and I think, you know, his backstory and his character, everything revolves around that in pushing him as a character, right? Like he was in the 40s and now he's coming to this world that is so different than his. All he wanted was to have the one dance with the girl that he liked, because he was so, you know, no girl ever liked him, right? And like, so all these problems really go into his character. I look at Brave New World, and I think Sam could have been so much more, his story could have been so much more interesting if it dealt with veterans, right? Sure. Or like PTSD, something that like relates to his character. Because in this movie, like he really, you know, his, one of the things that he's really good at is he's good at talking to veterans and helping them through the problems that they have after war. And it really is like it's not a superpower, but it's his gift, right?
Well, that's kind of what Sam and Steve bond over.
Exactly.
Even though they're guys from two different generations, they have this common, you know, understanding of what it's like to be in an active war zone.
Right. Which is really great for those two characters. And like, so Brave New World, it would be great if they could have integrated that into the movie, but it's not really about that. I mean, it's not about that, like how it is with Steve. Steve is adjusting to this new world and trying to take in everything. And then in Civil War, he goes against the government, which going against SHIELD is one thing because they were infiltrated by Hydra, but going against the government is another thing, where he is taking a stance as like, no, I don't think this is the right thing to do. You know, I'm not just going to blindly follow you. Anyway, so his whole character, everything that he does is really, it's really interesting for all the stories that they told. For Sam, it's not nearly as interesting because it's just kind of like, oh, this is like kind of like Winter Soldier, but it doesn't relate to Sam as a character, right? Like,
right,
it would
exactly.
have been so much better if they could have done something with that.
those are some of the kind of the key things that I highlighted about these couple movies that we watched is just stakes and the built-in character dynamics that already exist from the larger story being told and what that does to help color the story, because you kind of can't view any of these movies in a vacuum. They're all connected to the larger story around them and informed by the larger story around them. If you showed any person just Captain America, the Winter Soldier, and they'd never seen any other MCU movie, they'd probably be like, I have no idea what's going on. I don't know why it's significant that the Winter Soldier is Sebastian Stan. I don't know why, you know, like they wouldn't be like, they'd be like, oh, whoa, Sebastian Stan's under that mask. Like they don't know why that matters, because they haven't seen Captain America, the first Avenger. It's a TV show. Like you can't just watch season 3, episode 4 of a TV show you've never watched any other episodes of and be like, oh, this looks like a great show. You've got, you know, you've got to watch the whole thing. But that's what makes these work, is it feels like we've sort of lost the connective tissue in these later seasons. And again, I think the problem is, inside of having Thanos be the end goal, there are all these individual character arcs. And for Sam, being introduced in this movie, I really like the dynamic between Sam Wilson and Steve Rogers in this movie.
Yeah.
I love that we start with them. I mean, it's a really great scene with Sam Wilson in the morning jogging around the, you know, the reflecting pond at the Washington Monument, and Steve Rogers just keeps lapping him because
on your left.
And Steve runs like 13 miles in like a half an hour or something. Like it's like crazy, you know.
Yeah.
But also it shows like the similarities between them. Like they both wake up and they work out in the morning and they both get to, you know, but also they're both soldiers who are struggling to find a purpose to what it is that they do. They both know that they have this really particular skill set, but they can't really find a reason for it anymore. Steve's still working on finding his reason. And I think Bucky is sort of his kind of emotional driver, but Sam is inspired by Steve. And he believes in Steve. And so there's like this great little line where, you know, like Nick Fury looks at Sam at one point late in the movie to kind of be like, hey, are you going to be on my side or what? And Sam just says, hey, don't look at me. I do what he does, just slower. And he just kind of is like, I'm with Captain America, man. Yeah. You know, like, and I think that the arc of Sam Wilson's character in from here to Endgame is Sam Wilson being first of all, he's given purpose again as a soldier, and he's really shown like not only are you just like a great soldier, but like you might be like you're good enough to hang with the big boys, like to be an Avenger, to be on the A squad, to be on the top tier team. But kind of throughout this thing, he's still sort of viewed as Captain America's sidekick. He's just like he's Captain America's right hand man. He goes with Captain America in Civil War. He, you know, in Ant-Man, there's a joke where he's like, nobody tell Cap about the fact that Ant-Man kind of beat me up, you know, stuff.
Yeah, it's great.
All this stuff. But he's like, he's Steve's right hand man. And his arc is Steve allowing him at the end of Endgame to be like, you know what? You get to step up now, kid. Like you don't need to be like you never needed to be in my shadow. I believe in you. Like you've hung with me this whole time and there's no reason why you need to be just my sidekick. And I get that there could be a story to be told now that he's taking on the mantle, but also in a way there is a completion of that character's journey. It's like the Sam Wilson as the side character journey, it's completed at the mantle being passed to him.
Yes.
I feel like a better story is one that sort of exists in the imaginations of the audience of like, and then you can just imagine what it would be like. But if they do, they wanted to go on and keep telling the story because they're never going to stop because these movies keep making money.
Yeah.
But then it's like, okay, so you do Winter Soldier and the Falcon and Winter Soldier. And that's a whole story about Sam not feeling worthy of the shield and having to, the whole arc of that series is that he needs to feel like he can trust that Steve gave him the shield for a reason.
Yeah.
But then you have basically in Captain America, Brave New World, we basically do the same thing where he's just like, I don't know. Am I allowed to be Captain America? And it's like,
As we've talked about before, that really Endgame, like Falcon and Winter Soldier should have been him struggling to take the mantle, but not like trying to give it up. Like he's trying to give it up. And it's in Falcon and the Winter Soldier. And it's like, that's like, it actually probably would have been more interesting if he accepted the mantle, but the government didn't accept him as the Captain America, right? Like, they gave it to, he doesn't want it, so the government gives it to someone else, and then he has to get it back, right? But like, if the government kind of went against him, and he is like proving himself and like actually has to step up and doesn't really refuse the call, just has to figure out how to get to that point, mm-hmm. I feel like that would have been better. Because then, as you said, in Brave New World, it's like, this is the same story. Like, he should be in that role, and everyone should see him as Captain America. And like, they should respect him as that. But I still feel like, even we as an audience, if he is doubting it, like, why are we going to think he's good? And why are the Avengers going to take him on as the new Captain America? So,
and it's still just like, you go back and you watch Captain America Winter Soldier, and it's still like, I know that Captain America Brave New World talks about this, where the whole kind of one of the themes is, you're not Steve Rogers, kid, you know?
Yeah.
And you're never going to be. And Sam Wilson knows that he knows that his strengths are different from Steve's strengths, and that he doesn't have Steve's super strength. But I still think it is kind of a fundamental problem, because one of the things about Captain America, as good of a person as Steve Rogers is, one of the things about him is he's superhuman. He's, you know, you can't get away from it. Like, it's all over Captain America, the Winter Soldier. Like, he is very, very strong and very powerful, you know?
And his, the fight scenes in this that he's doing that are obviously superhuman moves, mm-hmm. make it more fun.
Yeah.
And make it more interesting. And I actually, that from the very first part, from when he gets on the ship and they have to take over that ship and all that, he's fighting those guys, and that's like so cool. And I'm like, this is so fun to watch.
I remember seeing this movie in the theater and being like, I guess I didn't really think about it, but I guess Captain America just has no problem killing guys. Like, he's just killing dudes. He's just,
that guy did not live.
Yeah. Like, his philosophy is like, if you decided to be part of the pirates, then you forfeited your life. Like, I don't care if you got kids. I don't care. Like, if you decided to team up with people who are going to hold, you know, knowing that I'm out here, knowing that Captain America is at you, you decided to do this, then all right, then I'm going to throw this shield right at your neck and break your neck.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true.
He's just like,
he's so much more fun to watch. Murdering aside.
Yeah. Even I think it's even kind of funny in this movie, this little beat where he fights this like French guy that's leading these pirates, and this guy's kind of, you know, he's obviously very strong, very like brave to fight Captain America, but as far as we know, this guy's not a super soldier like Captain America is. And he says to Steve, he goes, I thought you were more than a shield. And Steve kind of puts his shield away and says, let's see. And I love that little beat, but it's still like, dude, you're gonna get worked. Like, like, you're fighting a guy who has a serum running through his blood that makes him like almost as strong as the Hulk. Like, he's going to destroy you. And then he does. He kicks the crap out of that guy.
he does. You're not gonna win. It's not.
But I like it that Steve's like, sure, I'll put my shield away. Like, I'll, you know. And it's similar to like the fight in the elevator, which is such a great fight.
Where he's just like, it's so cool.
Yeah. They just put like 15 guys on the elevator with him, and he's like, all right, boys. He's like, you really like, okay, like, let's see if all of you can take me out. And it's like, no.
And the movie, you know, it's so good at raising the stakes and raising the tension and making these fight scenes fun and interesting. Like, the whole thing, like, when he gets in on the elevator, like, that's when he realizes, like, it's not just a fun scene, because it is a fun scene. Mm-hmm. And it's awesome in these tight quarters. And, like, they don't just, like, have all the guys come in at once and then they just attack him. Like, they build it up. Like, a couple guys get in, you know? Mm-hmm. And then a couple more, and he like, they go behind him, and he's like, he gets pushed in the middle, and you could see that he notices
one guy has his hand on his gun.
Yeah.
And he sees that early on, and he's like,
yep. And he sees the guy sweating and he's like, and so, you know, like, something's up, like, and so it's just like all this tension keeps raising, like, why are there so many guys on here? Like, what's going on? And then like, he gets it, and he's like, all right, if anybody wants to get off, get off now. Go after him. And he kicks the crap out of all of them, and it's awesome too, because they if he didn't have anything, he would have beat him so much quicker, but they put that metal thing on his arm, on his wrist, right? And he's only got one arm, so he has to kick the crap out of him with one arm, which is like still so cool.
And again, it's like Sam Wilson kind of can't be that situation. And that's just what, I mean, that's one of my problems with that movie is even with like the Wakandan tech of the, you know, kind of the kinetic energy thing, I still am like, I don't think Sam Wilson can fight a Hulk. I just don't think he can. Yeah. And I don't think that Sam Wilson can be in an elevator with 15 guys who are all trying to beat him up and get him and get out of there without his wingsuit. Maybe with his wings, he can open his wings and just like chop everybody down. But I don't think just Sam Wilson just fighting can get out of there. And it's no shade to Anthony Mackie or to the character of Sam Wilson. It's just sort of a fundamental problem with like the difference between Steve Rogers on a chemical level, because Steve Rogers before the super serum is nowhere near the same soldier as Sam Wilson. Sam Wilson does is very impressive. Even in Captain America, the Winter Soldier, he's great. Sam Wilson really proves himself in that movie to be like a valuable asset to the team.
He does. And that's where he shines, is that side character, unfortunately.
Yeah. Again, it's like, if we're talking about the bigger picture with what's wrong with the MCU and going back to this idea of like narrative decay, it's all just bonus story at this point, because all of these characters had satisfying arcs that we were following. Part of what makes Captain America the Winter Soldier an interesting watch is tracking the character arc of Nick Fury, tracking the character arc of Steve Rogers, tracking the character arc of Black Widow, Scarlett Johansson.
And
being introduced to new characters like Sam Wilson. And when all of those arcs kind of reached this satisfying conclusion, and they did such a nice job of, for the most part, most of our main characters got really satisfying conclusions to their arcs. And even our side characters got little things where it's like further story is implied. It implies that the story goes on, but we don't need to see it. The problem with bonus narrative is I mentioned Joey and Rachel. It's just sort of like you get to a point where it's like, okay, we've had Ross and Rachel get together, then break up. Then Ross was going to marry Emily, but he said Rachel's name. Then they had this rekindling. They decided not to do it anymore. Now we're just sort of in this space where we're like, I guess we're focusing on Chandler and Monica now. Okay, Chandler and Monica are getting married. Okay, they're married. So what do we do now? Maybe Rachel and Joey? And it's like, everything that they've been building toward is satisfied. They're just sort of like, how do we keep this going so we can keep making more money? And then you do something like a Joey spinoff and you have the Joey spinoff series. And it's like, no one really cares about watching. Maybe there's an interesting story to tell there, but no one really cares about watching Joey without the rest of the friends. And that's kind of what watching these latest MCU movies feels like, is you're watching a spinoff show where they just can't let it die. They just can't let the IP go. And you keep tuning in to be like, maybe they'll do something interesting, but you're just sort of like, now the show's over and you guys just keep going. You just keep trying to find things to say or do. And even the stuff that you're finding could be better written or more interesting. But the reason why I think that there's no cure for narrative decay is you kind of can't come back from you. Once your story's over, once you've finished telling a story in a satisfying way, you kind of need to leave it and move on to a new story. You can't keep just like at and going, and then this happened, and then this happened, and then this happened.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, it really is. And also the one huge problem with a lot of this applies to TVs and movies, is like raising the stakes. I don't know if that's the right way to say it, but like, or one-upping.
Yeah.
That's the better way. One-upping is like, okay, the sequel has to be bigger and better. Mm-hmm. And like, it's gotta be more, and it's gotta be like, we can't just have the same thing. We've got to have it bigger and we got to do one up. And it's like, okay, how are you going to one up wiping out half of the universe? Like,
right.
How are you going to do that?
Right.
Like you can't. And like, that's fine that you can't, but it's also like, it's kind of like, okay, well, what are we working up to? Like, I don't, Thanos, I knew who's the other big bad. And like, it's kind of
going to be Jonathan Majors. And then that kind of blew up in their faces and fell apart on them.
Yeah.
So it's like, nobody knows what we're watching or what we're building toward. I can't tell you what character arcs we're kind of tracking and built, like what relationships we got our eyes on. There were things like Iron Man and Pepper Potts. And there were things like, you know, Natasha has a little flirtation with Steve in this movie, but it's clear that they're not going to do that, that they're going to be friends. Right. And then I think that the Natasha and Bruce Banner thing was interesting. Yeah. And, you know, there's things like Vision and Wanda, and there's things where you're tracking relationships. I can't tell you in the current version of the MCU what the are we doing anything with, I mean, is Peter going to be trying to get MJ back now that she doesn't remember who he is at the end of No Way Home?
Yeah.
I can't tell you like what the character arcs are right now. It's just a bunch of movies that don't really feel like they have a direction. And that's because for the most part, they kind of did it. And now they're just in this bonus zone where it's almost like that implied story area where the story is implied to, it's implied that Sam Wilson is going to go off and be some version of Captain America, but that's always going to be better in your imagination than if they try to show us, because we're not meant to see really what happens after the story ends. We're just meant to sort of, there can be implied things that go on, kind of like the way that No Way Home ends with Spider-Man. I'm like, the fact that he's got like an OG Spider-Man suit on that he made himself and he's running across, and it feels very like classic Spider-Man. It's sort of like, this in many ways feels like the completion of this version of Peter Parker's story arc. Yeah. There are open-ended things of like, we don't know what's going to happen between him and his friends or him and MJ, but he's going off and he's going to be kind of the more classic version of Spider-Man. He's not wearing a Tony Stark suit. He's wearing a suit that he made himself, and it looks more like the classic. And but it's like, let that be it. Let it end, you know?
Yeah. Well, and it's also kind of hard. Like the first MCU had Iron Man, which everyone was surprised that Iron Man was such a good character. And I mean, Robert Downey Jr. played him so well.
Right.
And then he is kind of like the crown jewel, you know, like everything kind of revolved around him. And he would come into movies for a little bit, and it kind of like you had a central figure that like everybody could kind of rally around. And I mean, Steve Rogers was also kind of that to a point. It was him and Iron Man were like the two. Now it's like, okay, who's the one? And I feel like it should be Peter, should be Spider-Man or the X-Men, but the X-Men, honestly, you could probably do something.
They're not even there yet. So we don't even know what we're going to do with them.
It's almost like maybe you guys should just not do any Avengers and just do an X-Men universe for a while. I don't know if that would be good or not, but that would be something different that would give us a pause. And then maybe we'd be excited for the other ones when they come back. But, you know, if Peter could be the central character, like the new Tony Stark, if we could kind of all rally around Peter, that would be great. The problem with that is that Marvel still doesn't own Spider-Man.
Yeah.
So they can't even do that. So like Spider-Man, it's great when he comes in, but he's owned by Sony.
Yeah.
And they can't really do as much with him. So they're really kind of in a catch-22 again.
That's the thing that was working in that original continuity, is there were character arcs that you could track between films that felt like they connected in a satisfying way with each other, that felt like they built on each other in a satisfying way. Even Thunderbolts, it's like, it feels like it's going to be just like its own thing. I don't see how Thunderbolts is going to build on whatever character arc they were already establishing you know, Florence. And also the marketing is getting increasingly desperate for these films. Like the marketing for Captain America Brave New World, it felt like they did so many different versions of like how they tried to package the trailer to get people to see it. And again, it's like, you know, I think one thing that was working during the original continuity is great villains. And we haven't really had that in this latest. You know, Cassandra Nova was like okay in Deadpool, but like the marketing for Winter Soldier was, no one knew who the Winter Soldier was. And it was actually a genuine surprise when that mask came off for the first time. And the movie does such a good job of building the kind of the allure and the suspense around who the Winter Soldier is. And then also, like, you know, not for nothing, Robert Redford's in this movie doing great work as like a really interesting, really nuanced villain. And you know, who's not just like mustache twirling, but actually has a plan that's interesting. That's like and there's sort of this built on lore with around like the corruption that's baked into the U.S. government that Iron Man has bumped up against in Iron Man 2 with some of those kind of like congressmen and senators. And like, it just felt like there was like a satisfying world being built. The latest trailers for Thunderbolts have me laughing so hard because it's literally Marvel saying without saying, like, this is an A24 movie. I don't know if you've seen this trailer that goes like, it's like from the editor of Everything Everywhere All at Once. And
production designer of this.
The production designer of Minari and like the composer of, and it's all these A24 movies.
I've never seen anything like that.
I've never seen anything. Wow. It even says the cast of Midsommar and, you know, like these different A24 movies that all of these actors have been in. And it's literally just listing a bunch of different A24 movies and roles that movies never say, like, from the editor. The person who did the soundtrack for, you know, like,
The cinematographer from Green Knight and you never bill anyone like that. You can do producer, you can do producers of, or like, you know, producers of, you could do director,
writer and director.
That's like, writer sometimes.
Yeah.
Like
sometimes
barely, but like cinematographer, production designer, editor, no, I've never seen that before in my life.
This trailer is literally just them going, it's an A24 movie.
That's what they're going for.
If you guys like A24, this is an A24 Marvel movie is what they're saying in that trailer very, very blatantly. But it also feels really desperate. It feels like they're like, please come watch it. It's going to be cool. Yeah, this one's going to be cool. Like this one, like this one's cool.
I'm not going to lie. I actually really like that trailer. Because it was so different, but it is pandering. Like, look at all these crazy things. This is going to be crazy too.
And it doesn't tell you.
Kind of like, okay, yeah.
And I like that it doesn't tell me anything about the movie.
Yeah.
And it does. And honestly, I'm like, my prediction for Thunderbolts is that it's going to be one of my more enjoyable experiences. But what I'm scared of is that I'm going to go see it and it's going to just be like, nope, this is just another like post Endgame Marvel movie that doesn't really have an anchor and doesn't really know what it wants to, and it doesn't really have like its footing in a continuity, because the continuity is kind of all over the place right now.
And it
maybe it'll work as like a one-off that's interesting visually or something, and it's definitely got a good cast, but I'm worried that I'm gonna go see it and be like, you guys kind of tricked us with the marketing, like, this is hopefully not. But I also just don't know, like, what is the larger story right now? Because when I watch Ant-Man and when I watch Winter Soldier, I know what the larger story being told is and how these movies help to inform that. I don't really know what's going on in the larger story of the MCU right now, or what they're trying to build towards. And so even when there's moments in movies that I think are interesting visually, or there's beats that I think are interesting for that character, I'm like, I don't really get, you know, like, I think the villains in Brave New World were weak and not particularly interesting. It's very interesting to have Bucky Barnes be this like this shadowy ghost assassin who's been going around on these missions for throughout the 20th century. He's been frozen and unfrozen and he's been sent out on these missions, and he's kind of like the opposite of Steve Rogers, but they're both, I think that's really compelling storytelling. And you know, I just don't see anything like that in these later iterations where,
And it's also a problem again, is there's things have become too big. Like, there never was an Avengers until they got to the Avengers.
Right.
It's like, now it's like, if you have a huge event, everybody's wondering, well, why don't you get the Avengers?
Yeah.
And so that's kind of one of the problems too. So the stakes have to be more personal.
Yeah.
They have to be more personal, which I think they kind of get away from. Like, no, make it a personal story. Like, that's why Black Panther, I know that was in the previous one, but that's why Black Panther is so good, is because the stakes are personal. They're about his own country and his own history, right? And genealogy of the decisions that his father and his fathers before him have made. Anyway, so it's a really good story because it's very personal. There's not, you know, Brave New World's not very personal to Sam.
Yeah. And What were you gonna say? Sorry.
And I was gonna talk now Ant-Man.
Yep. I was gonna say shifting gears to Ant-Man. Yeah.
Yeah. Like an Ant-Man. The thing that makes Ant-Man so interesting is it's a fun movie, first of all. Like, and so now it's like it was great to watch the Captain America movie, and now I'm glad that we watched Ant-Man because it is pretty self-contained.
Yeah.
But you know that it is leading to something bigger, and it knows what it is. It's a heist movie.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a fun heist movie. Yeah, Paul Rudd, who's great. He's a funny character. It's a pretty funny script. It doesn't take itself too seriously, but then it has this power that's really interesting, like shrinking and like hitting people and getting big and going small and getting small, you know, like running around and running on the gun. Like, that's a fun thing to watch.
Peyton Reed does a nice job with this movie, but it definitely has Edgar Wright all over it.
I know, it has
the DNA of Edgar Wright.
It does. I really did like this movie. And I do think Peyton Reed, he had to come in and, like, I don't want to say fix the project because it wasn't being fixed, but he had to pick it up and carry it across the finish line. And he did a great job because it is a fun movie. Adam McKay came in and Paul Rudd, they helped like with the script to kind of make the transition. You can definitely see like the whole Sam Wilson, the whole Falcon part. You could totally tell that was shoehorned in.
Yep.
But it actually worked and it was fun. But I really would have loved to see what Edgar Wright would have done with this movie, because I know that it would have been more stylized. The music would have been better. It probably would have just had more popular music in it, and it would just be more fun and more Edgar Wright, which I love Edgar Wright. So,
but I'll say this about Ant-Man. So Ant-Man's not one of my favorite MCU movies. Like I like Ant-Man and the Wasp a little bit more. You know, for me on rewatches, it can get a little draggy in the middle. Yes. Like, you know,
absolutely.
I think that it gets a little like, okay, let's go. But I'll say this about that first era of the MCU, those first three phases or whatever they were, the Infinity Saga. One way that they kept the TV show from getting creatively stagnant or from every episode of the show feeling too similar is they let directors come in and do interesting things with their episode. So Winter Soldier is a great example of this. The Russos came in, it's their first episode that they got to direct, and they came in and they made this like spy thriller, and they definitely did something that felt stylistically like its own thing. And they let Guardians of the Galaxy be its own thing and have its own energy and its own kind of rhythm. And then they let Taika Waititi come in and do Thor Ragnarok. And even inside of the Thor continuity, you have Thor, then Thor the Dark World, and Thor is directed by Kenneth Branagh has this very Shakespearean kind of, which is right, you know, to introduce us to these characters. I think Thor the Dark World is not as bad as people say it is. People dog on that movie a lot. I think it's fine. But then Thor Ragnarok comes in and it like reinvents it, but it still feels connected to the Thor storyline. And that's what's so impressive about these early MCU films is the way that they would let, you know, Shane Black come in and do a Shane Black Iron Man movie. And they would let, you know, and it would, you would feel the presence of the director, and they would let people kind of put their creative stamp on things. And Ant-Man's a great example of that. Like Peyton Reed getting to come in and have some fun with this character. Cause I remember when they announced this movie, people were like, Ant-Man. But then the movie sort of has fun with that. The movie has fun with the fact that you're like, why would you do Ant-Man? It's like, oh, don't worry, we're putting Paul Rudd in here and he's going to just, it's going to be silly. And the movie's not going to take itself too seriously, but it does still live in the larger world nicely. Cause when Paul Rudd's character gets introduced to people like Steve Rogers and Tony Stark, he's always like, hi, you guys. So, you know, and they're always like, who are you? Like, you know, and they, they kind of, you know, and they have fun with the fact that Ant-Man's sort of an outsider. And I think that's why maybe my favorite MCU movie of the last several years was Deadpool and Wolverine, because it's the only one that feels like it has its own individual style. But I still have a problem where I go like, I don't know how this connects to the larger thing. Yeah. It just definitely feels like it feels more like it's a part of the Deadpool trilogy than it does, like, it's a part of the MCU larger story. I don't know how it's supposed to connect with, other than having it do with the TVA and stuff, I don't know how it's supposed to connect with the larger MCU story, but it definitely feels like it's got its own thing going on. And that was what was cool about some of these movies, is like Ant-Man has its own energy and vibe. And I like that.
Yeah, it is good. It's a lot of it's a lot of fun. It, like I said before, like, it knows what it is. And it has an interesting, the story is good. It does set up for other movies. And it kind of like, and the, a lot of people like rag on this villain, but I actually think he's better than a lot of the other ones.
Yeah.
He's better than, like, I actually kind of like him. They gave him a story, you know, like, he is, he's really wanting approval. And like, I think that he's not the most interesting. He's not the worst.
Yeah, I don't know why he's so homicidal. Like, I don't get that.
Yeah, I don't get that either. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But like, he's at least, he seems at least dangerous, and he's kind of a fun one to watch. Way better than
It almost seems like they needed to do something where, like, in his experimentation to replicate the Pym particle, he toyed with some chemical that, like, messed with his.
Yeah, that would be something.
Messed with his brain or something, and made him more, you know. And they sort of allude to that, like, his obsession with proving himself to Hank Pym has made him, has warped him and made him lose sight of who he is. And they allude to that, but I think they could have made it more interesting if it was like something happened and he was so obsessed that he drank some potion or something that made,
you definitely could have done something, but he was at least interesting, and you know, it was fun. And then the other thing that I noticed for Ant-Man that they did, kind of like we talked about with Brave New World, like, it would have been great to have another Avenger come in. Like, if Rhodey could have come in, War Machine could have come in, that would have made it fun. And even though I said that the scene was shoehorned in with Falcon, I still liked the scene because it was funny. Like, it was, I forgave it because it was a fun scene. And it actually does pay off in the post-credit scene.
Yeah,
post credit scene is from Civil War, and he's like, "Hey, I know this guy that can help us," and it turns out to be Ant-Man, which I'm like, "Oh, this it makes sense." Like,
it works nicely to fold that into Civil War. Yes. Like, Sam Wilson's like, "Hey, I met this guy who's got this suit, and if we're looking for team members to go, you know,
like, I think he can help us."
Yeah. That's nice. You need to have that. You need to establish that connection, and I think it is a fun scene. I think. And it's kind of a proving ground scene for Scott before he goes on his big final mission.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And it is, it kind of leads to this is where the story is going. Like, we've been talking about, like, oh, they gave this little hint, like, oh, I'm going to see that in the next movie. I'm going to see that in the next episode. So it kind of made it, like, more fun to look out for. Like, we kind of have that with Adamantium, but that really, like, that's so vague. Like, I know that's pointing to the X-Men and to Wolverine, but like, how?
Right.
This one is like, oh, he meets an Avenger. And then in the post credit, like, oh, Ant-Man's going to come back in this movie. And it's like, oh, yeah, cool.
And then he does.
And then he does.
Yeah. And Ant-Man's awesome in Captain America Civil War.
He is.
It's like one of the coolest parts of the movie. That whole scene at the, you know, Ant-Man getting giant and stuff like that, and revealing that power that's not even in this first movie is really fun. Like, saving that for Civil War. And I think Michael Pena and the boys are really fun.
So funny.
In this movie, Michael Pena is so funny in this movie. And I really don't think that he like overdoes it or anything. I think it's like, it's great. And like the whole Michael Pena telling stories and them doing like a kind of like a drunk history, like lip syncing thing where everyone is so funny. And again, it gives the movie its own kind of sense of identity. And like, I love the guy that plays Scott's boss at Baskin Robbins at the beginning. Who's like, he's like, "Hey man, I was reading up on you. That's awesome." And he's like, "That's so cool." And he goes, "Well, obviously I have to fire you." He's like, "Well, listen,
if you want to grab one of those Mango Supremes or whatever, like, I'll just look the other way." And he is actually drinking it, which is pretty funny.
Awesome.
It's a funny little, it's a funny little scene, but it's a, that's why I didn't love Ant-Man and Quantumania Like it was, it did not feel like it fit with the other two. The other two were fun. They were funny. Like, and they did weird things. And Quantumania was just like a straight superhero movie that was dumb.
I get the natural progression that it's like, hey, you introduced this concept of the quantum realm. And that's a really fascinating concept. And I forgot that we actually go there in this first Ant-Man movie. The Ant-Man in the climax of the film.
Right.
Shrinks himself all the way down and goes subatomic and actually is falling into the quantum realm. And we were introduced to that space and that he, you know, uses this PIM tool on his regulator to, to blow himself back out of there. And I think that's cool. And I think it's a natural progression to be like in Ant-Man and the Wasp. We explore the fact that they've been able to, they're trying to reach the quantum realm because they think that Hope's mother, played by Michelle Pfeiffer, might be alive down there. And it makes sense that for a trilogy of Ant-Man films, we should do a whole movie where they just go quantum. And it should have. I liked the concept of Ant-Man Quantumania.
Right.
Like that seemed like a great, it's kind of like, I like the concept of Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness. Yes. I like the idea, the abstract concept of Doctor Strange going through the multiverse and having all this. But the problem with Multiverse of Madness is he goes to like one other universe and just doesn't, there's a scene where he's traveling through multiverses and it's like a 30-second long little montage of him going through different multiverses, and then the majority of the movie just takes place in one alternate universe. And I was like, so this isn't really Multiverse of Madness, this is just Doctor Strange in like universe over here with these. And I thought that movie could have been so much more wacky and crazy and wild and trippy. And I kind of felt the same way about Quantumania, where it's like, hey, if we're gonna go down here, Quantumania was so weird too, just in that it just seemed like, I made a video making fun of it at the time where it just seemed like they just told their design team, like, any kind of guy you can think of, just put that in the movie. And they were like, broccoli guy in the movie. Like, I don't know, like a guy that's a bunch of bubbles. And they're like, bubble guy for sure. It's like, what about a guy who like you drink him and his goo makes you be able to understand people. And it's like, sure. 100%. It's like, just like any kind, it's like buildings that walk around and it's like, oh yeah, sure. You know, like it's just, it
was crazy. Yeah.
And I think that I just think the movie could have been more fun. I think,
well, yeah. And I think that's what we're both saying. Like, I don't have a problem with them going into the quantum realm.
Yeah.
The problem is it didn't feel like the other two. The other two were fun. They had it. They had a style. It was usually a heist comedy or like something like that. And that didn't feel like it fit in that trilogy. And I think we kind of both agree on that. It could have been more fun.
Yeah. Yeah. And it seems like a natural progression for the story, but when you get there, it's just sort of like, and as so many things are, I don't know if it's just fatigue from the writing team of being like, we've just been writing for these characters for so long and trying to find new, interesting things for them to do and new ways to surprise the audience stylistically, or if it's that the studio, that Disney in collaboration with Marvel are clamping down on their directors and the amount of freedom that they're trying to give directors on what they can and can't do.
Could be.
I don't know. I mostly, I just think that it is just a TV show that should have been canceled and that never will be canceled. And it's so weird because I look into the future with Marvel and I go, they're never going to stop this. Like, there's never going to be a time where they're just going to go, that's enough. And we can now start over. We can cancel this show, end this show, say the end, and then start a new one and start, have a new continuity with a new Iron Man and a new, like, I don't know why that I feel like, One thing that DC does well is they know when to quit and they know when to like start over. Cause it's like, they just,
they've done it about five times.
Totally. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, but it's like, how many different times have they reinvented Batman in the last 20 years? And
and they're not afraid to have something that is in its own universe.
Yeah.
So Batman, the Batman with Robert Pattinson, is not connected to the new DCU.
Right.
Like, and Joker is not even connected to the Robert Pattinson Batman.
Right.
Like, and I feel like that's why I was saying, like, maybe they should just do an X-Men universe for a while and play that up and have it lead up to Apocalypse. you know, and have like a whole 10-year period where they lead up to Apocalypse. And then once that's done, maybe you reboot the series and start it over or pick up the characters or something. Like, I don't know. Like, it seems like we need to take a break from the MCU for a while and do the X-Men universe.
Yeah, because
I don't know if that would work or not.
The same problem is happening with Star Wars too, where it's just too much of the story, and then you get fatigued because you're kind of like, I don't even know kind of where we're at or how. I'm excited for Andor season two because I think that's one of the best shows that has ever been made inside of the Star Wars continuity. But so I still think that these properties are capable of the occasional surprise. I'm hoping Thunderbolts will be that. I would not be surprised if it winds up just being kind of more of the same, but I'm hoping to be surprised by it. But yeah, it was nice to go back to these films and be like, it made me want to watch the other ones too. It made me want to watch Captain America: Civil War. Made me want to watch, you know, Thor Ragnarok. Maybe want to watch all three of the Iron Man movies, to be honest. Maybe want to watch, you know, Avengers Age of Ultron. I think that's an underrated movie. I like it. I like that movie. You know, I just feel like that was such an impressive feat. Yeah. Those like 20 or 22 movies that all connected.
Oh, crazy.
And it just seems like everything's kind of been in this weird.
Yeah.
Just like it just feels like when Scrubs switched networks from NBC to ABC and all of a sudden you're watching Scrubs on ABC and you're like, huh. it's Scrubs, but like JD's like a teacher at like a medical school and he's teaching and it's like Scrubs, the new class, and it's like the new class, and it's just sort of like it's not the same show, you know. It's just like I don't really just let it go you know.
I agree. I think we should have to talk about Andor at another time though.
I don't really
share the same opinion that you do.
Oh boy. It's one of my favorite TV shows from like the last like 20 years. I love Andor.
I got some gripes about it.
All right. I would love to hear that. Let's do scores for these films. We watched two movies. We watched Captain America, The Winter Soldier, and we watched Ant-Man. Our scoring system, if this is your first time watching our show, we give a technical rating for just the nuts and bolts, the craft of it, the writing, the acting, the special effects, the staging. We give a score for the ending. How well did the movie stick the landing? We give a score for rewatchability, for cultural significance, and a subjective score. And it's out of 10, 10 being the best. So, Kramer, what'd you give Captain America: The Winter Soldier on a technical?
I gave it an 8. I think it's done really, really well. We didn't talk about this, but the structure for Captain America: Winter Soldier was not very traditional. Mm-hmm. It does hit the beats, but like they had the midpoint and then it like immediately went into the third act, like right after that. And I love structure. I love to see it. It's really good to have a good structure, but for this movie, like if it's working, just go with it. Mm-hmm. This doesn't matter that the structure is a little bit weird and things aren't hitting where they're supposed to, because the movie is working. Like the movie is working really well and it's not traditionally kind of how you see it. So I actually really like it. So I gave it an 8. I thought it was really good.
Yeah. Whereas Ant-Man has some pacing issues, this movie is incredibly well paced. Captain America: The Winter Soldier it just keeps moving and moving and moving, and it just keeps taking you from like one interesting thing to the next. And there's lots of like surprises and unexpected things in this movie that I remember the first time seeing it being genuinely kind of surprised by several story beats and constantly entertained and different kinds of action set pieces, like, you know, just setting one in an elevator that's like so cool. And I gave this movie an 8 as well. Nice. Technical. So how about the ending for Captain America: The Winter Soldier?
Yeah, I gave the ending an 8 as well. I mean, it's a big spectacle. I mean, it's awesome and it looks really good. A lot of stuff blowing up, a lot of stuff, you know.
It still looks great. I was really kind of impressed with that. This whole sequence where the helicarriers kind of come up out of the water. And I was like, man, this stuff looks great in this movie. Like Marvel was putting out some heat with these special effects. And it is a great climax. It's an emotional climax with him and his friend Bucky, where Captain America is more or less willing to kind of die with his friend. He looks at his friend and just kind of goes like, hey, man, if we're going to go down, and I don't care if you're going to kill me, I'm with you to the end of the line, pal. And, I like Bucky jumping into the water after him and pulling him out, not really knowing who he is, but having a sense that like, there's something about this guy. I think that's a really strong ending. I really, I gave it an 8 as well. How about the rewatchability for this movie?
Rewatchability, I gave a 9 because it's just like really rewatchable.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's fun. It's also a movie that like, if you've seen it before, you could just pick up at any part, know where you are, and just enjoy watching the rest of it. So
yeah, I agree. Great. Yeah. It's a very entertaining film, and it doesn't matter how many times I see it, it's still very entertaining. And there's just so many different sections that are interesting, and knowing the characters in the larger story, it's interesting to watch what's going on with them at this point in the story.
Yeah.
I gave it an 8 for rewatchability, but I really like it. How about cultural significance?
Cultural impact significance. I did an 8 as well, because I think that this really kind of showed that the MCU could keep going. And like, you know, it was after Avengers, pretty soon after Avengers. And it was like, okay, like it gave the MCU a lot more momentum. Like, I just remember everybody loving it, almost like after the Avengers, they were like, oh, what do you do now? Excuse me. And this movie was kind of like, here you go. Like, this is where we can go with this. And it really kind of hit on all cylinders and showed us that this is where it can go.
I agree. I think everyone was really impressed with what they had seen up to the Avengers and the way that was pulled off. But everything had kind of been this like tongue-in-cheek comic booky sort of aesthetic. This felt like the first movie that kind of dropped everything into a more grounded place. So I give this an 8 because I think it sort of legitimized the MCU as like there are serious stories with real emotional impact that can be told here that are with characters that feel grounded and character arcs, because going from Captain America, the first Avenger, which is such a like kind of plucky movie, that's, you know, to this, there's such a stark contrast in tone. And I feel like this movie did a lot for the MCU and in kind of making it feel like this, had a life beyond the Avengers. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, especially with the Russo brothers,
mm-hmm.
I mean, they did this one, then they did Civil War, then they did Infinity War and Endgame. And
I think
like,
the fact that Kevin Feige decided to give them kind of the reins to tell the biggest remaining stories says a lot about this movie.
Well, and I was reading, and it came down to them, F. Gary Gray and Nolfi, whatever, I forgot his first name, Nolfi. And I guess F. Gary Gray dropped out to do another movie, and they won the job because of Community.
Mm-hmm.
The show Community. Like, they did an episode that was like action, you know, I can't remember what the episode is called. It's like the paintball one or whatever. But they got it. And it's like, good job, Kevin Feige, for like giving them the reins. Cause it's, they weren't very experienced, but they really came onto they rose to the occasion.
Community is another one of my favorite TV shows of all time.
I love it.
Love that show. Yeah. We could do a whole series on just Community. I think that show's brilliant. And the fact that he handed them the reins really says like, okay, this movie, I think he really believed in them after this. And I think I think the rest of the movies that they directed in the MCU are all really good. They haven't really made a movie since the MCU that's been very successful, but the 4 movies that they did in the MCU are all very good.
They're amazing.
So, and subjective score for Captain America Winter Soldier.
I gave it an 8. It's a great time, and it's smarter than you think it would be. It's a really good movie.
Me too. I was 8s all the way down on this one. It sounds like you were 8s except for 1 9.
Yeah, the rewatchability.
And,
yeah,
I was 8s all the way down. Ant-Man. What is your technical rating for Ant-Man?
7. It's solid. It's a really solid movie. You know, it's not the best, but it's not the worst. It's some fun stuff. So
that's exactly where I'm at. 7. I think it, you know, has some pacing issues, and it's also just like not the most fun, but it's got a lot of personality and it totally works. And like the characters as an introduction to them are all interesting, and I want to see more from them and more from the character by the end of the movie, which is all very good. How about the ending?
I gave the ending a 7.5.
Mm-hmm.
Because I actually think it pays off really well. It's like, it's a really good payoff with his daughter, And then like with his, you know, the new husband, Bobby Cannavale, who he's actually really good in this movie. Like, surprisingly, that story really pays off emotionally.
Yeah.
And it kind of like, it sets up for the next one. So I didn't want to give it an 8 because it wasn't like it was amazing.
Yeah.
But it was very emotionally satisfying. So 7.5.
Yeah, I gave it a 7. It's kind of same thing. I feel like it works. I feel like I like this climactic fight in Cassie's bedroom.
Yeah,
well, I like that Peyton Reed has fun with the visual that it's them throwing trains at each other. But
the train.
But then it shows the wide shot of the train just kind of falling over. And that's fun. And, you know, I think that it's a fun kind of setting for a climactic scene. But I don't think it's amazing. I don't think it's like one of the greatest endings in the MCU. So I gave it a 7.
Yeah.
How about rewatchability?
I did 7. Again, just a solid movie to rewatch. I think I do kind of agree with you definitely on rewatch. Sometimes you're like, I don't know if that's holding up or whatever, but still a fun movie to watch. Paul Rudd is great. So.
Yeah, I went down to a 6 just because I just found myself kind of drifting. I was just sort of like, I definitely wasn't having as much fun as I was having watching Winter Soldier. While I was watching Winter Soldier, I just kept thinking like, man, this movie's great. This movie's really good.
Yep.
And watching Ant-Man, I was like, this movie's fun and has a lot of fun things. I don't think it's great. I think it's fun.
Yeah. I think you're probably, you're right.
Cultural significance, cultural impact.
Yeah, I did a 6 because it was... It was fun. I mean, it was great because it was like, oh, you can make minor characters more interesting. Like you can make them more interesting. So that when you put the right people on them, but I don't think it really changed. I mean, him as a character though, I mean, he ultimately is the reason why the Avengers were able to save everybody in Endgame.
Ant-Man, I personally like Ant-Man a lot more as a side character in the bigger stories. I like him more in like Civil War. Like I love Scott Lang's story in Endgame.
Yeah.
And like, I think it's very emotional. Like him, when Paul Rudd sees his daughter for the first time she's
so good
and she's all grown up and he missed out on her growing up and she thought he was dead for, you know, I mean like it's,
years.
That hits hard. I feel like Scott Lang works better as a kind of side character in big. It's kind of like Black Widow. Like in her own movie, it was fine, but the Scarlett Johansson character, I think, works better as like a side character in someone else's main story.
Yeah. And they either push the characters or they make them do things that are more interesting for other people's movies. I think you're totally right on that. Yeah.
So but I gave it a 6, cultural significance and subjective score for Ant-Man.
7. It's good. I like it.
That's right where I'm at. 7. Yep. Solid movie, solid MCU movie. Not my favorite, but definitely not bad. And so that's it. So, you know, where do you think the MCU's at? Are you still enjoying these movies? Let us know in the comments. Do you think our analysis is right on why it maybe has fallen off or fallen into something like narrative decay? Let us know. Comment, like, share, subscribe, all the things. Tell your friends about the Wonder Podcast. And we'll see you on the next one.
Bye-bye.